This is Warren Worcester at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, and I will describe a little bit about the recent Trans-Pacific expedition of the Scripps Institution. On the 22nd of July 1953, the research vessel Spencer F. Baird sailed from San Diego Harbor carrying a crew of scientists and sailors, about 36 people. When on the last day of November in 1953, the ship returned, she had traveled over 16,000 miles and had covered much of the North Pacific Ocean and the Bering Sea. The track which the ship followed took her across the California Current into the central water of the North Pacific, then north across the subarctic current into the Aleutian Islands and the Bering Sea. The first stop of the ship was at Dutch Harbor. After a day there, she went on to Adak. From Adak, the ship went towards the coast of Kamchatka, across the mouth of the Bering Sea, then down into the North Pacific Ocean. After visiting in Hakodate on the island of Hokkaido in Japan, ship went south to Tokyo and Kobe, then returned to the United States by way of Midway and Hawaii. The work of the Baird on the Trans-Pacific expedition can be divided into four parts. The major work of this expedition was biological work. An effort was made to collect organisms from the various water masses of the North Pacific. At the same time, studies were made of the physical and chemical characteristics of these water masses. The hope eventually is then to be able to describe the distribution of both the water properties and also the creatures living in the sea. And it is hoped that this will help us to understand the distribution of these animals. The biological program included collections by standard plankton nets and also included collections by deep fishing devices known as the midwater trawl and the diving dredge. Both of these devices were used to great depths during this expedition, on occasions as deep as 2,500 or 2,800 fathoms, or nearly 3 miles into the sea. Many strange and unusual appearing creatures were brought up from the depths. It's difficult to say at this time whether any of these creatures are new to science, because the specialists will have to look them over and compare them with other collections by other ships and at other times. An effort was also made to study the primary production of the sea. All of the food in the sea, or all of the organisms in the sea, derive their food primarily or basically from plants. And the study of the production of food by the plants of the sea is of great importance in oceanography. During the Trans-Pacific expedition, numerous measurements of productivity were made using a new technique developed by a Danish scientist, Stima Nielsen. This method was first used on the Galatea expedition, and we have made certain changes in the method and used it in regions where it had not been used before. The physical oceanographic part of the work consisted basically of a series of about 135 oceanographic stations at which observations were taken down to great depths. The deepest observations to a depth of about 6,000 meters or about 18,000 feet. On these stations, measurements of temperature were taken at a series of depths, and collections of water samples were made. These samples were analyzed for their salt content or salinity, and also for certain dissolved substances, dissolved oxygen, phosphate, silicate, and on certain stations, total iron and total phosphorus and manganese. These chemical observations will both help to explain help to interpret the productivity experiment data, but will also be of interest in interpreting the distribution of other properties in the ocean. In addition to the observations made on stations, there were numerous observations made while the ship was underway. Primary among these observations are the continuous echo sounding records, which are kept of the depths of the ocean. The new echo sounding device, which we carried with us, was able to record in great detail down to the greatest depths which we encountered, about 5,400 fathoms. Other observations which were made underway between stations were observations of temperature down to about 800 feet using the bathythermograph, continuous record of surface temperature, the occasional collections with the deep collecting devices, and then observations which are made all the time on oceanographic vessels of the weather, of the birds and the mammals and other large organisms which are seen from the deck of the ship. The high points of the trip from a traveler's or from a tourist point of view were the visit that we made to Bogoslav Island, which is about 100 miles west of Dutch Harbor in the Aleutian Islands. This island has been reputed in the past to change form and disappear and reappear. We were very anxious to land on the island and to collect some of the rocks and creatures living on the island. Two of us went ashore in a small boat, three of us, I mean, in a small boat through the surf, and we found a tremendous colony of stellar sea lions, probably several thousand of these animals on the beach playing in the water. We also found countless thousands of muirs and seagulls nesting on the islands. We spent about half an hour walking around and collected some birds and also broke off pieces of rock, which were brought back for analysis. Our visit to Japan was very productive, both from a social point of view and from a scientific point of view. The Japanese scientists were greatly interested to visit with us and to see the ship. This was, in, I believe, the first American scientific vessel to have called in the Japanese ports and to have had visitors aboard since 1929. In addition, it was the first American research vessel which ever had Japanese scientists on board to participate in the work. During our work in Japanese waters and on the way back to the United States, we had a total of seven Japanese scientists at different times on board the ship participating in our work, studying our methods, and exchanging information with us. The high spot of the visit to Japan was undoubtedly the visit which we had with the Emperor of Japan, who is very much interested in the sea, is a marine biologist of renown, and it was a rather unusual occasion to have a group of visiting scientists invited to visit with the Emperor, but we spent about an hour and a half, the whole scientific party, discussing the expedition with the Emperor. He was very much interested in the biological work being done and asked many questions about the collections which had been made. On the way into Tokyo, the ship stopped briefly in the region of Bayonnaise Rocks and Myojin Sho. Myojin Sho is a submarine volcano which exploded in September 1952. And at the time of this explosion, a Japanese oceanographic vessel was lost with all hands. Among the people on board were many renowned Japanese scientists. About 5 miles from the Myojin Sho is a group of small rocks sticking above the surface known as Bayonnaise Rocks. And the Japanese scientists and other geologists were very interested to have a collection of rocks from these islands. Two of us landed in a small boat on Bayonnaise Rocks and collected numerous pieces of fragments of rock from the island. Then after leaving Bayonnaise, we steamed past Myojin Sho, which fortunately didn't blow up this time. We were not able to see any of it above the surface, but it was quite obviously there. You could see the green water and the line of breakers along it. From after visits to Hakodate, Tokyo, and Kobe in Japan, the ship steamed away across the Kuroshio Current, the famous Gulf Stream of the Pacific, and back up into the North Pacific, working in an area which had never been worked before, trying to collect the basic physical, chemical, and biological data from this interesting region. It was hoped that the ship could go as far north as 40 degrees north, but the weather prevented this, and at about 38 degrees, the ship was forced to turn and head for Midway Island. From Midway Island, a line of 10 stations were carried out to Hawaii, and then from Hawaii, the ship sailed home, making only a few observations, occasional plankton tows during the night. It's difficult to say now what the outstanding accomplishments of the Trans-Pacific Expedition were. Many of the results will not be obvious for several years. It's necessary to do a great deal of computational work on most of the oceanographic data before it can be analyzed. The innumerable planktonic organisms must be counted and identified. But to me, it seems that the major accomplishment of the expedition will be to fill in the large gap in the western North Pacific, which had never been worked before. And upon completion of this job, we should be able to describe the oceanography of the whole North Pacific Ocean with a fair degree of success.